I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board-certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice.
To postpartum, like this postpartum is way different than last time.
Right. So we started talking about your breastfeeding journey. So you want to kind of talk about both. I mean, I feel like you can't talk about one without the other anyway,
right?
Because they're so closely connected. So tell us.
We'll just continue from here. If you've listened to our podcast before, you'll know like my breastfeeding journey was not great with Eli.
Mm-hmm.
And it triggered my postpartum depression pretty badly. And I mean, there was a lot of other things behind that were layered. But breastfeeding really, really triggers me, and that like proved to be true this time around too. Like breastfeeding just triggers me.
Let's talk about what happened with Eli for people that might not know, or for moms that have breastfed or started breastfeeding, or maybe some mamas to be that are listening. Like what happened with Eli? Because you had a pretty extreme actually situation.
Yeah.
From a clinical standpoint. So why don't you talk about what happened there and then what happened with Archer and how it really played into your postpartum experience and mental health?
So having Eli first was like a blessing and a curse, right? So like I think that is always the case because you're always going to have like good and bad. But like with Eli, I didn't realize how bad it was.
Yeah.
And I even had a lactation consultant. She never actually really told me how bad it was.
Right. Well, I mean, look, there's sometimes I look at somebody's nipples and I am like, holy, like, not going to curse. But I'm like, okay, take a deep breath and I'm sure literally ER physicians, like how do you sometimes like, you just have to control because you feel for people and you see how bad it is and you're like, all right, like we got to fix this. Like,
well, I didn't even realize how bad it was until this time around
because
I feel like you were more honest with me about everything because I need honesty. Like
I feel like
even if it's not bad, I need like, cause I will justify it to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, and it's not like fine. You shouldn't be lied to.
I was like, this is fine. He just nicked me. I'm just bleeding. Like, it's fine.
My nipple's just hanging off. There's absolutely no problem. I can push through.
Yeah. But that's how I am.
I know.
Normally. Like.
Right.
So but for someone to tell me it's bad.
Right.
I need to hear it.
Let's clarify for everybody listening, and you can go back and listen to some of the breastfeeding episodes we've done because we've done like two or three of them.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be uncomfortable. No. You shouldn't be in pain. Okay. There is some nipple discomfort the first like 2 weeks with hormonal changes. That is not like, I can't stand the last, like that is not pain to a degree where you like can't even nurse, or the nipples aren't healing, or you have trauma or damage or bleeding or like all that stuff is like not normal. So just for anybody listening, please don't go into Facebook groups and hear other parents share their stories and think that things are acceptable to push through. Like, please get help. It's out there. It's covered a lot of the time, or it could be free depending on the source. Just listen to a professional. Like, this is a case where, like, you need to get professional help early if it's something you want to do.
Because even as a professional myself, like, I've even said to people, oh, it took me 8 weeks. When it's like, well, okay, that's not good advice either because even though it took me 8 weeks, it's just like that's not okay.
I know.
So with Eli, it took me really like 10 weeks because every time I latched him, it was like extreme pain, like pain to the point of like me hitting the arm of my chair so hard that I thought I broke my hand, like that much pain.
So and you mean took 10 weeks to get to the point of being able to nurse normally without discomfort?
See, I thought it was normal, but it wasn't. Right. So like right. 10 weeks for me to be like, okay, I can tolerate this.
Hmm.
Probably yeah. took closer to like 6 months for it to not be painful. But even when it was not painful, I was still having pinched nipples or like that lip, mm-hmm. that lipstick nipple.
Right. Misshapen nipples, which mm-hmm. is not normal. So everybody knows when it comes out, yeah. it should look like a pencil eraser. It should look like your nipple, but slightly larger, like swollen. Right. So go ahead. So finish telling your story about Eli, because it ended up with like a very pretty serious situation.
Well, so I had like severely inflamed nipples, misshapen nipple. He had a lip tie and a posterior tongue tie that I had revised. And after that, that's when it started getting tolerable. But it still wasn't totally correct.
Tolerable. But didn't you get mastitis and end up with an abscess? Oh, yeah.
Totally forgot. I didn't.
I'm like, wait, Sarah, you're leaving out the part that's like, not that that stuff is challenging because it is, but I'm like, most people.
I had a massive abscess that came back twice, and it never, like, I should have had mastitis. That's how severe it was, but I never, like, had.
You never developed it.
I never developed it. But the first time they drained my. I actually diagnosed myself. Because
that's what we do.
I was told I had a clogged duct, and I would do dangle feeding, which we talked about dangle feeding in an episode. Wasn't working. Mm-hmm. I tried everything under the sun, and this was still when it was like severely uncomfortable to nurse.
Right.
I tried the vibration. Lo and behold, it was because it was not a clogged duct. It was an abscess. And the first time they drained it, there was 30 cc's of fluid. It was just pus-filled milk. And then it came back within a week. And the second time they drained it, it was 20 cc's of fluid.
Okay.
So it was pretty big. And for those that don't know, I mean, I'm not somebody that takes antibiotics, but obviously, like, this was, like, I just had pus in my breast.
Yeah, there's exceptions to.
Right. And they gave me, the first time they prescribed antibiotics, it was an antibiotic that you could not take for lactation.
Was this a breast surgeon?
Yeah. And, like, I had to catch that, too. Like, I caught it. And I had to call the office because she like gave a script and she had somebody else order it. And the other person that ordered it, I think the pharmacy didn't have it. So they were like, oh, we'll substitute this. Well, you couldn't.
Okay.
So like I had to catch it. And that's something that like everybody listening, like you need to be in charge of. You can't just trust what the firm. You have to ask. You have to ask questions, especially when it doesn't just affect you.
Well, and make sure you ask your providers. So be sure to double check with the breast surgeon. Be sure to double check with your OB or your midwife because they're going to know. They're definitely going to be able, or that we have resources that we check for that kind of stuff. Or your your IBCLC. I mean, we have this stuff at our fingertips and I'm verifying. Right. Like even when people submit intakes to me, I always double check that what they're taking is like compliance.
Right.
Just as like a courtesy.
Right.
And I like let them know what level drug it is and possible like things to look for in the infant. Like, I mean, you know, that's kind of like excessive, but I also feel like they don't get told those things a lot of times. So it could be helpful.
And the only reason I knew to double, triple ask was because my breast surgeon said, you can't take this one. So whenever they told me they substituted it, it prompted me to be like, can I even take that? Because that was something like I didn't even think about. So yeah, we had breast abscess, we had inflamed nipples, we had misshapen nipple, we had lip tie, tongue tie. And, you know, just looking at Eli now, I never really noticed, I've noticed it, but I never really correlated it back to his nursing, was that Eli's jaw does also, just like Archer's does, it deviates to the left.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure Eli had like TMJ issues as well.
Right, like some structural issues. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes along with the tethered oral tissue in the mouth. So yes.
So that's something that we're going to actually have to work on for him too, because I don't want that to be a lingering problem for him. But yeah, so all that correlated to like weeks and months of just like way discomfort. And because inherently, like it's not about like breast is best, fed baby is best. I just wanted to nurse. Like Eli was getting enough food. I had the supply. I just had the supply. It's not like I had an oversupply, but for me, like nursing was everything I wanted to do. Like there is no part of me that wanted to formula feed, and that was just my.
That was your feeling. That was just what I wanted. Just your choice. Yeah, I don't know how I even got so determined that I was breastfeeding. Like, I don't really know. Cause like I've told you before, I didn't really know much about breastfeeding. I thought people breastfed for like a couple months.
Right.
I had no idea. Like I just had no concept. And we took a class, and a hospital class at that. And I just like had this, I had my baby and I was like, I'm determined to breastfeed.
Right.
I don't care what it takes. And like, but that being said, she was like small. And I feel like when you have a small baby, there's a lot of pressure on you to get them to gain weight. Yep. And usually small babies and children aren't going to have these massive, you know, leaps and bounds and growth. Okay. And I felt like I would felt so pressured. And so many other moms have the same story. Like, to get her weight up and to feed her constantly. And I remember going to the pediatrician for multiple weight checks, like the first like 10 days. And the first time we went and they said I had to come back in like 24 or 48 hours, I looked at Chris and I was like, if they recommend formula at any point, we're finding another pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to people that I knew had family practice physicians who were very breastfeeding friendly or had nursed very long term that were physicians that could help. Right. I was like, I will not accept this as an answer, and we will find another doctor. And I had never felt so strongly about something in my life. And I'm like, why do I feel this way about this?
Well, it's like, because it's just like, it's another thing that's just like, oh, you can't do this, so you need to do this. Mm-hmm. Whenever, I don't know, like, maybe it comes down to the fact that this sounds so stupid, but it's not. Like, I was really concerned about finances at that point because I wasn't getting paid, that I was like, why the hell am I going to like spend money on formula whenever I have the supply that I need? Mm-hmm. I needed to feel fine. And I mean, I nursed for 13 months. So like it all ended up well and good. I actually plan on nursing Archie longer because I was having other issues, and that's why I stopped nursing Eli, and he didn't really want to anymore.
Right. So like, he was already starting to wean. So it was a pretty simple process for you.
Right.
I also have a theory that I feel like you and I are very root cause people. And I think this is my other theory on why just our personality type or people like us chose to keep going. And not that other people don't, because I've seen people go to the ends of the earth. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like sometimes not an option. You want to get to the root of it. So it's like you're doing everything you can to get to the bottom of the issue and find a solution that actually is like a holistic solution. You're like, there has to be an answer here. It's not the biological norm for this not to be okay. So what biologically is happening in her system or his system and our system that it's not working? Like, I got to figure it out.
And that's like, and I mean, like, you're right. Like, that's how I approach everything, not just for myself, but for my But for Eli, like if Eli has a bad week of tantrums or something, I'm like, okay, like what is really going on? Like, I just don't accept that it's just him.
It's not just. And I want to say this to people listening that are going to have babies and want to breastfeed or have breastfed or had to stop for whatever the reason. If you couldn't get to the bottom of it, of why it wasn't working the way it was supposed to. We've talked about this before on the podcast. Things just don't go away. Mm-hmm. Children don't outgrow things.
Yeah, so, that's the biggest BS that you will ever be fed.
And I will tell you, I've been doing a lot of additional training, extended advanced training, holistic training. And a lot of experts and healthcare professionals in this field will say breastfeeding is a vital sign. Mm. So if the child cannot breastfeed well, or you are not making milk, something is wrong.
Right.
You know, physiologically or physically, structurally, that's not working properly. So we got it. Like, let's figure it out. And it's okay if like the choice wasn't to, but down the line, there could potentially be other challenges that you might not actually know or relate it unless you actually worked with somebody that had expertise in that particular.
That's a really good point, because it's like if mom's not making milk correctly, like that's a hormone. That could potentially be a hormone issue that maybe it's not affecting
you
now.
It could be 10 different things.
Right.
Really. It could be not just
hormone. It could just be like, oh, just stop breastfeeding, accept it, move on. Like that, no, that can affect your health later. So
I want everyone to feel welcome here and that we support your choice. If you chose to stop, or you just chose you didn't want to do it, like there's people that are like, I just don't want to do it. That's completely different. Right. That's fine. If your intention was to move forward and it wasn't working out for X, Y, or Z reason, it's actually really important to get to the bottom of that, because
that's a really good point.
It's connected down the line to a lot of things.
Right. Right. That's a really good point. Especially because like if somebody told you that you had to stop,
mm-hmm.
like that's different. But with Archie, his first latch at the hospital was great.
Yeah. You said that.
It's like no pain. And then a second latch was fine. And then as soon as I got to the postpartum unit, I felt really dumb. They made me kind of feel like I'm reflecting on this as like, I knew we were going to talk about it. They kind of made me feel dumb in that, like I was trying to latch him a certain way, but they were just hovering.
They wanted to fix it to be the way that they felt like it should be.
Yes. And the way they felt like it should be was like, literally like pushing on the back of his head to get him on. Right. And like, I know, like from what I've read, what I did with Eli, like it was like, I would never push on the back of his head. It was like the middle of the shoulders and like toggling Atlas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just felt a lot of pressure. Like, he would latch when they weren't there, and it like was not acceptable to them that like they missed me latching him almost. Like,
why? If the baby was feeding or there were there was diaper output, I don't understand why that's even like an issue.
Yeah. And it's like they were just really concerned with like me showing them. But every time I showed them, they didn't do it the way that I would have. And like that's where I got like my first injury, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they like helped me quote latch on the right side, and I ended up with a wound that I, when Val came to look at it, she was like, oh no. And me, I'm like, oh, it's just a small wound.
Did I say, oh no? Okay. For those of you listening, if I ever see you, I won't ever say that. I just happen to know Sarah and we're friends. So, like, yeah. I think my reactions and things that I said near her were probably a lot different.
She goes, well, I showed you my left one first because it was just red and
inflamed. That is not professional,
Val. Yes, it is, because you tell people the truth and like nobody.
Oh my god, I've never said that to someone else.
Okay, well, I don't mind it because I need it. Like, I need someone to be like, no, Sarah, that is a large scab.
Doesn't look good.
Does not look good. That should hurt a lot worse than what you're telling me. Because she looks at the left one, she's like, oh, it's inflamed, it's red, but like, that's probably just a latching issue. And then I showed her my right, and I'm pretty sure you said, oh, no. Oh, honey, no. And that's when you're like, are you sure the left one hurts worse? And I'm like, well, yeah, this one has a scab, but it's fine.
But that was also, I feel like, a structural thing, too, oh, yeah. That you ended up getting worked out. Yeah, but.
Oh, yes. So in the hospital, I was highly encouraged to see an oral surgeon because it was suspected that Archie had a lip tie. And he did. He had a pretty severe lip tie, posterior tongue tie and anterior tongue.
I was going to say he had both. Okay. So for everyone listening, I just want to break it down so you know that we're talking about, because you'll probably hear this thrown around a lot, like tongue tie or tethered oral tissue or tots or ties in the mouth. So there are seven attachment points in the mouth, and it's basically like connective tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the two upper, so the upper and left maxilla. Like, if you look, you know, babies, sometimes you don't see the buccal ties, but there's the two top and then the two bottoms, like where the gum line and the cheeks meet, if that makes sense, on the mandible and the maxilla. So like the upper and lower, for those of you listening. And then there's the upper labial frena, which is the upper lip, and then the lower one, which is the lower lip, and that you can actually have a lower lip tie for people listening that think that that's not a thing or heard that's not a thing. And then there is the tongue. So that gets you the 7, 2, 4, 6, 7. And any of those frena, frenulum or frenum, singular, can be either too tight or too fibrous or actually tethered to the base. So like the bottom of the mouth with the tongue or the cheeks or the lip, where it doesn't function or allow for proper function of not just the tongue, but a lot of the muscles and bones and everything in the mouth that has to work for a baby to breastfeed properly. So that's what people are talking about when we talk about ties. Just presence of a frena doesn't actually mean a tie.
Right.
Also, because there can be frena or frenum present that actually functions really well.
Right.
So anyway, go ahead, Sarah. I don't want to.
Yeah. So because
he had the front of the tongue, which is the anterior. He had the back of the tongue, which is posterior for everyone listening. And he had the upper lip.
Top lip. Yep. So top lip. It was hurting in the hospital. And because of everything with Eli, I was like, we got to get them revised. We literally went from the hospital to the oral surgeon because Mike wasn't taking any paternity.
Right.
And I was afraid of getting down the road and not having help.
And it being a really big issue.
And it being a huge issue. Not to mention I was having other company come and I get stressed out enough that I didn't want to be in severe pain. Like, these were all the things going in my head. I was having people coming. I was already in pain. I didn't want to be in severe pain and be a huge a-hole to the people that are going to be at my house and feel super alone again. Because whenever Eli was having issues, I was just in a room, dark room by myself and like crying almost every day.
Yeah.
And that it was just like a punch in the gut in the hospital with Archer being like, I don't want that for myself again. And like, I know Mike didn't want that for me. So we went straight to the oral surgeon. Oral surgeon actually said, oh yeah, this is pretty severe. It looks almost identical to Eli, except he has one more tie than Eli. Mm-hmm. However, I recommend that you see an IBCLC or like someone that does PT or body work before we do this. Mm-hmm. He said, I do want it. Like, I will do it if you want me to, because they are severe, but you should see these other options. Well, I was already in like panic mode.
Right. And you were already there.
And I was already there and I was in pain. So we did it. but it didn't help.
Well, let's pause there because this is a lot of people's experience. So what Sarah was saying and what I love about her pediatric dentist, and there's some really amazing pediatric dentists around us here in the Southeast Pennsylvania region. A really good pediatric dentist or ENT, some other surgeons do tethered oral tissue release, will recommend and require something, what we call body work, which is manipulation of fascia and or soft tissue and or chiropractic. There's all kinds of different types of body work. Even massage therapists sometimes can be really good at manipulating stuff depending on like if they've done this type of work. And also you really should be under the care of a lactation, an IBCLC. And I will see this something that I've learned, and I've learned over this like past year of clinical practice, but also with advanced training, is that it's really the IBCLC and the body worker who should determine when the baby is ready for what's called optimal timing of release, and letting the surgeon know like, hey, I think it's like a good time. So they typically don't like to do them before like 7 to 10 days. But that being said, like you were saying, Sarah, sometimes there's exceptions when mom is really like struggling. Yeah. You know, it's like really bad. You can't nurse, or you're constantly having to bottle feed and then risking, you know, or it's too cumbersome for the family to cup feed or finger feed or tube feed. You know, it can be a lot while you prepare and get ready for that release.
And I know myself, there was nothing really outside of breastfeeding that triggered my postpartum depression.
Right.
Like with Eli. Eli was a really good sleeper and he was a really easy baby. He was wonderful. It was the breastfeeding that like was my demise. And I was really afraid that I would reach that point with him. And then I did kind of reach that point with Archie.
Yeah.
Bless Val.
And what you had with Archie is what a lot of parents will experience. And this is why we say, like, just sending somebody for a tethered oral tissue release is usually 95% of the time, maybe more, not the only solution. If it's going to be done, which a lot of times it's necessary, there's other pieces that have to play a part in it, because you're not addressing the underlying issue with the release.
And
Archie, in a big way.
Archie's underlying issue, which is wild, but it's not, because like as a chiropractor, I don't think it's wild. It made a lot of sense. When his aunt was here, so Mike's sister is here.
Yeah.
Every time we would put him on his back, his hips would fall to the right and he would try to roll. And she was like, well, that's not good. He definitely shouldn't try to be rolling already.
Right.
And so we noticed like his hips were like really twisting to the right. Well, we were at that point, we weren't doing anything outside of just the basic adjusting. And then he had a release. We ended up taking him to the craniofacial release therapist in King of Prussia, and he was like, oh yeah, he has a pelvic twist, and pelvic twists almost always cause TMJ issues.
Yes, which is, for those of you listening, a lot of times if you cannot achieve a wide gape, the pterygoids are tight, the pterygoid muscles, and there's always usually a TMJ issue or tightness, so it has to be addressed.
Right. And it wasn't just purely a TMJ issue. It was a pelvic issue too. So like we started working with the CFT or the therapist, and after 1 week, his pelvis started unwinding, but then his lumbars were really tight. I was doing some adjusting at home, but that was a whole thing. We went three times and he started nursing better. I do still have like a few, like some days where it's still like my nipples are still getting inflamed.
Yeah.
But it's not like it was.
Right.
And that comes down to me continuing to do like oral exercises too, because it's not like you can just unwind those and the body
remembers. Home. Right.
The body has to be trained.
That's the other piece of this. So a lot of times, you know, parents will get stretches from the oral surgeon, the mm-hmm. pediatric dentist or the ENT. And what that does is it prevents the site that the frenotomy was done from readhering or reattaching
mm-hmm.
because you don't want that.
Right.
What you'll hear a lot of times is some people will have their tethered oral tissue release, the baby latches, and they have like an amazing breastfeeding relationship that keeps going. There's like at least 50% of the time, if not more, you will hear mom say, my baby never latched again, or my baby still never nursed right, or we still had weaning issues, or mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z issue down the line, and now my child is a year or 2 years. And the thing about it is if there are ties, for those of you listening, we've talked about this before, there is tension in the body, in the fascial web, mm-hmm. and the fascial web runs through the entire body, covering all the muscles and tendons and ligaments, and it never starts and it never ends. It's just one big web. And the front layer of that is the tongue that connects in a very deep, thick web through the whole body down to the toes. So it's very complicated, very intricate, and it holds a lot of tension. It holds a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It holds a lot of stress that can actually, you know, mom can transfer to baby, or baby can. A lot of times with birth, there's a lot of stress that happens. And, you know, I hate to overgeneralize, but I'm going to, because that's where we are this day and age, because people are still not doing a lot of the alternative, do you know what I mean? Like right. birthing choices. It's, you know, we've medicalized birth, and there's a lot of repercussions to that. There's a lot of stress.
That's classified pregnancy as an illness.
Yeah. There's stress and trauma to the mom and baby when that happens, because there's a lot of interventions. Does that cause the tongue tie? No. That's, I'm not saying that right. causes the tethered oral tissue. There's actually multiple theories about tethered oral right. tissue.
And let's put it that way. There are theories. Like we don't actually know.
No, they don't, but there's so many strong correlations with so right. many things, and I'm not going to get up on my soapbox. Okay, I will. About the state of our health, because we don't realize, even you and I who are healthy people, we don't realize how poor it really is from a mm-hmm. nutrient deficiency perspective. Mm-hmm. And I cannot stress enough, if you're listening and you've had a baby, even if it's in the past 10 years, or you plan on having more, or you want to get pregnant, I'm going to link 3 books that you absolutely need to read in the show notes, because it's something that we have to get a handle on as society. Like you have to absolutely look at nutrition as an absolute must, that you have to take care of preconception.
Oh yeah. I was just thinking about this today. Like there are 2 supplements that I will never replace
mm-hmm.
moving forward. The right. Women Complete multivitamin that I'm taking, because it's so in depth. Mm-hmm. And then if we are going to try getting pregnant again, like a fertility supplement.
Right.
Because it's so nutrient dense. Because God forbid, like, I have these tie issues again.
Right. And there's a genetic component, but
yeah.
So the thing with the
midline gaps.
I know. The thing with the genetic component is, so they no longer believe it's midline defects. So that was a theory. But I mean, it's associated sometimes with midline defects, which is yeah. hard, but again, all of that can be linked to certain nutrients as well. So it's like there's so many pieces of the puzzle that have to fit together, but I mean,
tissue in between.
Yeah, those, though, usually like, if there's tethered oral tissue, either the mother or the father or both probably had tethered oral tissue.
Yeah.
And like, when I say like a genetic component, again, we don't realize with nutrition how powerful it is from an epigenetic perspective, right. where me as a mother, if I just do something or lack something or add too much of something and that affects my baby, that actually will express for a couple generations until somebody corrects that in the line. Mm-hmm. And you can correct genetics with some things like nutritionally from the environment that have right. an epigenetic effect. So we know this.
Well, they even say the state of dad's health, like,
is crucial
for the 6 months leading to conception mm-hmm. or more, is actually more vital than mom's health.
Yeah, it's huge. But yeah, so we got on the Thai thing. And the reason why, you know, Sarah was saying like she had issues after the Thais were released and a lot of other moms do is because the baby, the tongue is developed from 13 weeks. So that whole issue with the Thais, like that tissue didn't go through apoptosis like it was supposed mm-hmm. to in the womb. And baby has learned to compensate with different neuromuscular connections, mm-hmm. You know, from the mouth and the tongue to the brain and make its own compensation to nurse. So when you clip that tissue, they're like,
it doesn't.
I'm sorry. I don't know how my tongue works. There's not the proper connections because they're not being given the right movements to practice. So right. That's what Sarah was talking with some of the oral exercises.
You have to do rehab.
Yes, you have to do. And we're talking like not the stretches. Those are in addition. We're talking like you have to make sure that you have had the proper chiropractic and or body work because mm-hmm. if the baby's stuck in flexion, mm-hmm. the tethered oral tissue can reattach and heal that way again. Mm-hmm. Baby has to be in extension. All of this has to be stretched out. The tension needs to be released. The PT has to be done, meaning your IBCLC, who knows what they're talking about with Thais, needs to be giving you oral exercises before the release and after because it's primed baby. Okay, like I'm supposed to use my jaw like this. I'm supposed to use my tongue like this. And they're super simple. Right. And I know it's like another thing for parents to do, but honestly, for a couple of weeks and to fix everything for a lifetime, it's important.
And I mean, like another thing that I'll continue to do and research because I think the things that affect you the most drive your decision making for like what you like to do. A part of like the body work that we did, I have a really good friend in Alabama in Tuscaloosa who like a lot of moms go to him for mm-hmm. the issue. And he does a lot of cranial work. He teaches a lot of the cranial work for this organization that mm-hmm. is sacro SOT. So cranial or like sacro-occipital therapy technique. Sorry, my brain is like mush right now.
No, you're right.
But I took some videos of Archie. I took some pictures of Archie and sent it to him. And although we're like hundreds of miles apart, he gave me some like specific adjustments to do for the jaw, the sphenoid, so where your sinus cavities yep. are held, some pterygoid muscle stretches, and then some palatine adjustments. So really working inside the mouth to start to open that left side of the face because it was like clear as day to everyone that something was wrong with the mm-hmm. left side. Like Archie still has bruising on the inside of his eye 8 weeks later from how much compression, I believe, that he had. His face was so bruised at delivery.
Right. He was stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
and like we were saying, a baby's structure really can be affect. It's very delicate. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be delicate so that mm-hmm. they come through the birth canal. There's so much that we talked about this, so much that has to happen. But when there's a breech birth, when there's C-section, when there's any type of physical difficulty for the baby, it can tend to affect structure a lot. And one of the things that you look at as a chiropractor and I look at as an IBCLC is like you put the baby down and you literally look at them. Mm-hmm. You're looking for symmetry. You're looking for asymmetry. Mm-hmm. You're looking for even the slightest little bit, like even if their eyes are off a little bit.
Like, oh my gosh, I sent you the pictures from before I started doing cranial work mm-hmm. and a couple days in, Archie's eye was like sunken in on the left side. His jaw was like pushed to the left. His hips were rotating to the right. So he had a massive twist in his spine, well, like in his fascia at the bottom of his spine. And I firmly believe that if we did not start this week one with him, he would be an extremely colicky, constipated, yep. gassy baby. Yep.
Yeah. And you even said to me in the text messages, like his face looks completely different. He looks like a different baby. I mean, he looked gorgeous, especially like after all that he was adorable yeah. to begin with, but you could literally see
the symmetry
changes. And that's yeah. why a lot of professionals like swear by video and photos. Yep. Like they want yep. their client. They're like, okay, I see the baby, but send this to me because yep. if I need it, I have it in your file, I can send it to another healthcare provider. But
right.
it's so glaring when you look at a picture or a video sometimes, and you can yeah. study it and see like the subtle differences. And that's funny you brought that up, because I do want to address the fact that a lot of conditions or symptoms that we see babies present with are a lot of times associated with tethered oral tissue of the mouth or tight fascial or structural strains. So babies are colicky, they're screaming, they don't like to be in the car seat, yeah. they have reflux, they yeah. have allergy-like symptoms, they're gassy, they're just miserable, they're uncomfortable, like that's right. what it comes down to, and they can't tell you. If your baby is sleeping with their mouth open, that's a problem. If yeah. they're snoring, like that's a problem. It's not cute. Oh my God. I've been listening to trainings from this one IBCLC, and she must have said that like 5 times in these videos. It's not cute. If your child or grandchild is snoring and they're a couple weeks old, it's dangerous.
Yeah. Like,
it's a problem. There is sleep apnea occurring yeah. and it's lacking, you're not getting the right oxygen to the brain. And, you know, the thing is we talked about long term, then we're going to have babies that grow up and become children, and they're going to sleep with their mouth open and their dry mouth, and they're going to have cavities, and they're going to snore, and then they're going to get their adenoids and tonsils out. That's because
literally what I was just going to say.
That's the problem.
And before that, they had ear infections and
all the time.
And yeah. Yeah. And you never outgrow these things. And that's why it's important to like get them checked immediately, especially by someone that's not going to like wave it off.
I think that's hard because I think it still does get waved off. Oh. And I think there's two schools of thought on this. Some people think, okay, it might not be absolutely necessary, which is sometimes the case, to have surgery. And there's others that say you should absolutely have the surgery regardless if it's there.
Right.
And those people are looking out long term, because people will say, well, oh, you don't know if that's going to happen long term, but really the research and lived experience even shows that it does actually, usually those things end up manifesting long term.
Well, I mean, like, okay. Not just address it surgically, but like surgery is always my last option, but it should be.
And I do want to say that it's glossed over the seriousness of the surgery too.
Mm-hmm.
So I have read comments of mothers online and on other IBCLC's accounts, and my heart goes out to them, where their babies have been injured or have bled or have ended up in the ICU. I mean, you know, there mm-hmm. are, it's surgery, guys. So let's not gloss over risk. Informed consent is important. So it's important to talk to the surgeon about what the risks are and have them go through everything with you.
Listen, this is a horror story, but I know this person, and they were much older. Like I think they were like 19 at the time, but they had their tonsils removed, and he sneezed too hard and his stitches ruptured, and he legitimately almost bled out. Like he was throwing up blood, and it was just like, he almost like choked to death on blood. And that's a 19-year-old. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's risk. And actually, there's a lot of older children and teenagers and adults that choose to have their ties released when they find out they're older and they realize that a lot of their symptoms are connected to, or they've spoken with a dentist or a myofunctional therapist or somebody, you know, that is an expert in that area and says, oh, hey, you know, you have tethered oral tissue.
My
and
sister
they're like,
had holy her crap. Release. My sister had her, she had a lip tie released when she was 12 because they said it would close her gap and did nothing. It like made her gap like bigger actually.
I know, that's the thing. So again, it's pros and cons. I think you have to weigh, even with your baby and your small child, you have to really weigh. We look at IBCLCs, we look at function, and we assess like how well is the baby feeding, what are mom symptoms, what are baby symptoms, what's the tongue doing, what's the mouth doing, what are they transferring, and we make sure that parents, or we should be making sure parents, have all of the information so that they can go discuss with the appropriate people like what their options are.
And I think like knowing all this over the last, you know, Eli just turned two, like 2 years, has made the experience with Archie easier to handle. I almost lost my shit over a milk bleb. I think that's when you came, whenever. Yeah. I had that milk bleb.
You did have a milk bleb. Those can hurt, milk blisters.
And then, well, then he like sucked it off and I started bleeding profusely. That freaked me out. That was the one time I've been freaked out with nursing, was just to look down and there'd be like blood gushing out of my nipple. But I have not had postpartum depression this time.
I was going to say, how, because this is like serious, this is important and this is serious stuff. And I get in, you know, we get into a little bit of this with Heather, which I think I forgot to link this one in the show notes, but I'll link it this week, about breastfeeding and mental health. Do you feel like, I mean, how postpartum wise, like you do feel like there were lows? Like, do you feel like you had postpartum depression? Do you feel like breastfeeding caused a lot of that or was related to? And then what did you, I mean, what would your advice be to people, to other moms?
I 100% know I had postpartum depression with Eli and I was triggered by breastfeeding and not feeling like I had help. Even this time around with the struggles with breastfeeding, I can handle it better. There's a few theories I have about that.
Can we talk about them or are you not willing to share?
Yeah.
Okay.
And even the same stressors that I've had this time around that I had with Eli, they got to me, but it didn't cause me to spiral.
Okay.
There's a couple theories I have. So one is that I did placenta encapsulation with Heather and I started taking the tincture and my encapsulation right after, and I feel like that has made a difference in like energy and everything. I started taking better supplements after, so that Women's Complete, and then a really souped up anti-inflammatory called SPM, which I really want to do an entire episode on because I really
think do you know who's taking them right now, who is postpartum with her second and breastfeeding again? Rachel.
Oh, really?
Who we had on. Yes. Because her and I were actually, she just had a breastfeeding thing. But she brought that up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely, she would probably love to talk about them, too, if we want to have her back on.
They're, like, I think they made a huge difference, especially with, like, decreasing inflammation. I have taken more walks. With Eli, I had high anxiety. I wouldn't leave my house. Okay. With Eli, but I've been taking, with the exception of potty training this week, which Eli is fully potty trained. Thank God.
Go Eli and go Sarah.
We've almost taken walks like every day. And for me, I just need to be outside. And I didn't realize how much I needed that until I wasn't doing it with Eli. And I was like, oh my God, this was so stupid for me to not do that. But I was afraid.
Well, it's hard, especially with your first, because you like you're just so caught up in like sleeping, eating, feeding, changing diapers. Like you don't even like think to care for yourself.
And I was honestly, I was afraid of other people. I was like, I'm a mom now. I'm a target, which is like, I still sometimes feel that way, but I push past it.
Yeah.
And especially with like Eli is in that phase where, I mean, he's a toddler. He's two. He has tantrums. However, he is so good with his brother. And I think just watching the two of them be together, it does something to you. It's just like, I don't know. Like, it releases endorphins to like.
Oh, absolutely. So I don't think I ever shared this on the podcast. Maybe I have. So everybody, I don't know. If you don't know, I've seen this, said this a million times, but the milk ejection reflex is caused by oxytocin. So that's the love hormone. That's the orgasm hormone. It's the feel good hormone. And I would have a letdown after I had Jude when I would watch Bianca and him interact and she would like love him. And like I would tingle and like my milk would start and I'm like, oh my God, I must be loving this like so much. And I've actually had it happen to me with Bianca when I would think about like desserts I liked.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah.
I was like thinking about these beignets from a restaurant that my friends and I would meet at and we would split them for dessert and we were going out that night and I was like doing my makeup and I was like, oh, beignets. And like my boobs just started dripping and I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, I wish people could measure the oxytocin in my blood right now.
I truly love beignets.
Beignets cause orgasms. That's the next research study. No, I'm kidding.
But really.
Yeah.
Carbs. Another thing, I think I am eating cleaner with Archie than I was with Eli. With Eli, I just justified it as like, oh, just eat whatever you want.
Like, I'm just surviving. I gotta just shove in my mouth whatever I can right now.
No, I cannot do that. I think there was
a lot for moms. I mean, I think we need to like say that too. Like, that's the sad reality is that it's like survival and people are just shoving in their mouth whatever they can find and is around. And like, that's not what we need postpartum, especially to heal and to breastfeed.
Yep. And one thing, like with, like I said, Eli is really a really easy baby. I could like cook dinner and like do things. I can't do that with Archie. He like, this is his witching hour. I can hear it. He started crying right now.
Yep.
Like I make my lunch at, I make our dinner at lunch now because he naps and Eli naps. So I know we're eating like a good meal at night. And I know like, even though I had the time with Eli, I was so stuck in depression and anxiety that I didn't take care of myself. And the bad nutrition definitely made it worse. I'm even noticing this time, even if I have like a little bit of gluten, I'm getting migraines. So really cannot be doing that this time around. Because I'm sure it affects Archie too. Like neither Mike and I can do gluten well. Like there's a very high
that
our boys won't either. But those are like the big things that I feel have deterred the depression is taking care of myself. So walking, I'm actually started working out earlier than I did with Eli. And that's just like simple, like stretching, yoga, starting slow, taking walks.
It's gentle movement. Yeah.
Gentle movement. It makes me feel strong and it calms me down. I'm getting better sleep because my bless my husband, he will take the boys in the morning so that I can sleep in. So like better sleep, better nutrition and exercise, which is like, it sounds so stupid, but like that's what we should be doing when we're not pregnant or postpartum. Those are the things that we do to take care of ourselves that make us feel really good. So like, yeah, we should be doing it postpartum.
I know. And we need that sleep piece is really critical, really critical for postpartum mental health and healing and breastfeeding. And I don't think we realize how much we need it and we're not getting a lot of it. So
one thing, or a couple things actually, and I'll link these here. I've been doing adrenal cocktails in the afternoon.
Now, what do you use? Do you do like the OJ and the cream of tartar?
Yes.
Some of them are like coconut water and salt.
Coconut coconut water, orange juice, salt, and cream of tartar.
It's delicious. And it gives you such a boost. I used them a couple months ago and I was like, whoa, I feel incredible.
A boost. I'm going to start adding collagen to mine and maybe coconut milk just to give us some good fats for like breastfeeding and brain development for Archie.
Yeah.
And that supposedly it tastes like a creamsicle and I'm okay with it. And then I've been doing a tea with a knob of ginger, half a lemon, and clove, because clove is good for the liver for detoxification. And then ginger and lemon are really good for your digestive system, anti-inflammatory response. So I literally just boil that on the stove and drink it.
It's super alkalizing for your system, but warming. So there's a lot of theories and a lot of cultures that serve warming liquids and broths and teas and stews postpartum. So like, it's just funny that intuitively you're like, I'm going to make this tea with these herbs that are like perfect to like warm my body from the inside out, because that's like what you need.
Literally, like I didn't want to move last night. So I asked, Mike is just like shining in this episode, but
you know what? He can do it. It's good. It's good. We love you, Mike.
He made my tea last night and I looked at him and like, he's been taking the brunt of like I still have postpartum rage. I will admit to that.
I still have postpartum rage.
I'll get postpartum rage and that like little things set me off. And if Eli doesn't start dropping the F-bomb soon, I will be very surprised. I really need to watch my mouth. That's another weakness. It's fine. But once he drops it, I'm sure I will stop. But I looked at Mike and I was like, this tea is really good. And he was like, did I do something wrong? I was like, no, I'm really sorry. You feel like I'm like mocking you.
But you're like, actually, I think you're the one that needs to make it every night now, because it's that good.
It is so good.
It's so good. You got to be the one making it. Thank you.
All day. I was like craving it. And the thing about it is like these things that we should be inherently drinking, like, they don't have added sugar into it. So like, it'll actually help replenish the gut health too, because you're not feeding it just crap all the time. So yeah, those are the things.
But it tastes good. And
everything's been different this time around with Archie.
It has. And I know you've struggled a lot, but I also feel like watching from the outside, I've seen you come like such a long way, and he's come such a long way, and you guys are doing, you're doing amazing.
And you know, I hesitate to like say this because I don't know who's gonna listen to it. I'm not stressed out, because I know that when I go back to work, it's like on my own terms and it's what I want to do. And for those that don't know, like, I'm opening, like, we have our own practice now. We'll have a small satellite where I'm just seeing pregnancy and postnatal, which is like everything that I want. So that's a huge part of it. I don't feel suffocated to go back somewhere. That makes sense.
Well, and it's on your terms. I think that's like what's huge. I think that's really what people crave and need at the heart of it. Are choices and options that fit for their situation. And a lot of times that's not what people get. And it leads to stress, right? And
well, I found out things. With Eli, I had those abscesses pretty close to whenever I had to go back. And my breast surgeon was like, absolutely, you cannot go back to work. You need to take a few more weeks, or else you run the risk of like having like damage.
Yeah, an infection too. That can turn into sepsis.
Yeah. And I was told I could not have more time off for like reasons that were not reasons. So like, God forbid something happened. Like, I know I can, like, I have options because I'm in control. And like, I think that's what a lot of women lack is like, control,
right,
in a lot of aspects of our life. But like, with the whole like postpartum and going back, I don't feel suffocated this time. And like, mm-hmm. that's like, that sounds dramatic, but that's literally how it felt with Eli.
I don't think that sounds dramatic at all. I mean, I made a conscious choice to not return to my corporate career, you know, with Chris's support and lots of discussions, because I was in a career that required a lot of time and a lot of sacrifice of my personal life, and it caused a lot of stress. Now, the job I was at when I was pregnant did not, and I enjoyed it. I actually loved all my jobs. I loved the industry and I loved what I did. The reality was, is I felt like, and him, he felt, he agreed, we could not have a family with me in that type of position. Mm-hmm. At least yep. the way that we wanted it.
Right.
You know what I mean? With the type of flexibility and the type of, the situation you want. It's
the situation you want.
Right.
Being the right. keyword.
And right. there's the rest of my life to work that way. You know what I mean? Like, I have the rest of my life to work that way. And now is not the time that I've chosen not to do that. And luckily, we're able to do that. You know what I mean? And
I mean, I was told 3 years ago, before Eli, before anyone, or before Archie, that if I wanted to have a practice, if I didn't do it then, there was no way I could do it with children. And I like would beg to differ for anyone that like wants to make a career change, and that if you want to make a career change that's going to better your life, better your family, you get to set the boundaries, the rules, whatever. It doesn't matter if you have a family. Like, yeah, this is hard, like putting this practice together. And like, I know there's going to be sacrifices on both ends. But what I'm gaining is infinitely better because I have control and choice.
Right. And I'm all like that. I think that's what it comes down to is choice. Cause I have a lot of friends, you know, who are in the industry I was in, who, you know, have done amazing and continue to climb that corporate ladder with the understanding that there had to be very specific work-life balance and boundaries yeah. with their career and lots of support from their partners, because yeah. it's not possible, I feel like, for two people to work a 50, 60 hour career and survive. I mean, lots of people do, but are you thriving? Are you surviving?
Right.
And I think if you have the right help and you know what I mean, like people and processes in place of course you could survive and you right. could thrive. If you know, the two of you are doing it alone, chances are like, you know, you're probably losing your mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There are days I feel like I'm losing my mind. But...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's...
But it's a different way. No, not anymore.
No, it's all about... It's about choices. And we want women to have choices. And we want everybody to feel supported in those choices and empowered. Mm-hmm. And like, you know what I mean?
I do.
It's exciting. I'm excited for you.
Thanks. I'm excited too.
And I'm so happy you're doing well and Archie's doing well. And he's just the perfect little gainer. He's always been the perfect little gainer.
He's like over 14 pounds now.
Yeah. Archie's healthy, guys.
Archie is is he 8 weeks? He's only 8 weeks. He's like 14 pounds.
Wait, even with like oral dysfunction, he like wasn't like moving his mouth and tongue properly nursing. He was like transferring like over the upper end of like what a baby would transfer.
The boy loves to eat and I'm okay with it. He's barely 2 months. He's 2 months today. Is it today? It was yesterday. He's 2 months yesterday and he's in 3 to 6 month clothes.
I love it. Nothing makes my heart happier
than a fat baby. Than a fat baby. Well, yeah, all the 0 to 3 month clothes, didn't even wear them.
You didn't need them. I know, that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like this one's long enough or pretty long. Is there anything you want to add?
Nope. I would just reiterate exercise, proper nutrition, proper beverages to help your body work, and the proper progression of how you should assess for ties and breastfeeding issues.
Yeah, it's important, friends.
proper progression and second opinions if you feel uncomfortable with what was recommended.
Yeah. And I think we've, you know, you and I have talked about this before. If somebody, mm-hmm. you know, if you see me and you don't like what I have to say, or you don't think it sounds right, or it just doesn't
say, she says, you, oh God, no, I'm just kidding.
Or I lay your nipples and I'm like, no, I'll never do that. Just to Sarah, because I know her. You know, get it. Talk to somebody else. We're always open. You know, that's what second and third opinions are there for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, thank you for opening up about your story.
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I don't know.
And this one was fun.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, I'm going to link a bunch of,
Yeah. We'll link a bunch of stuff. My toddler is screaming outside the door now.
So. Right. My newborn screaming. So.
Okay. All right.
That's all for now.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.